We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you are listening to Culture Vigilante. We are here again on Wednesday evening with you, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, and in the background you can hear my dog, Hermione, the liberty-loving Labrador, deciding to go into a barking fit right before we went on air. Sorry about that. A lot of things going on this week. Very important news. A baby was born in London, so we're going to cover that extensively tonight, and we'll start right now. A baby was born in London, and they named it today, George, and that's lovely. Congratulations, William and Kate, and now we're done. We're moving on. Okay. I can't believe all of the attention that drops for something like that. I thought my kids were royalty, too, when they were born, but I guess that really is royalty, so, you know, okay. So, but anyway. Other great news, there's a lot of stuff going on in the state of Missouri for the middle of the summer, you know, legislative session not going on, a lot of stuff going on in D.C. Craziness, you know, the state, the country is in a state of flux. I am going to take a minute to rant here. When I got home this afternoon, I went to the mailbox, and in my mailbox, I found a survey from my Congressman Blaine Lutkemeyer. And I'm really glad that I got a survey from my Congressman, Blaine Lutkemeyer. I think, you know, probably, I hope that all of the congressmen and women across the country send surveys to their constituents to get their opinions. Here's the deal. I'm pretty hot under the collar over this. And I'm just going to rant for just a minute. You know, it is a good thing that your representatives are reaching out to you. They want to know what your opinions are. But here we go, folks. After a while, you just kind of get the feeling that you are being condescended to. And I really feel that I'm being condescended to. You know, these elected officials have become so well-versed in how to speak the language, but they do absolutely nothing when they get elected. Here's some of the questions on this survey. First question. Do you believe the country is on the right track? And your answers are right track, wrong track, or unsure. Now, okay, you know, I guess that's, you know, that kind of differentiates the wheat from the chaff. You know, a very far left liberal would probably say we're on the right track. Most of the rest of us who aren't working or paying too many taxes or worried about Obamacare exploding in October, we're probably thinking, okay, we're on the wrong track. Okay. I'll give you that one. Second question. What is the most important issue for you? And at this point, I'm thinking, you know, the bomb is exploding. They're pretty much all important. And nobody's doing a damn thing about any of them. Healthcare, jobs in the economy, national defense, agriculture, energy, veterans, taxes, education, spending and debt, protecting life, Second Amendment, transportation, seniors, and immigration. Okay, you know, I in my recent memory, I don't remember Blaine Lutkemeyer making a big stand on any of these issues. There are very few people in Washington, D.C. I've heard anything come out of their mouths of any great significance about any of these issues. I mean, Ted Cruz is pretty good on the immigration issue, and I've been watching him talk about that. The healthcare issue, they're all talking about it, but nobody has any, you know, nobody's got anything to say about it or anything to do about it. Ted Cruz was on Fox a little while ago talking about defunding healthcare. Great, but nobody's really talking about it with any seriousness. So, you know, at this point, okay, I'm getting a little angry. Then I read the third question. Given the recent scandals, do you trust the federal government is acting in the best interest of the American people? Yes or no? Are you kidding? I mean, I cannot believe. I wrote on there, you know, is this a serious question? I just can't believe it at this point. And then, okay, it goes on. Do you support cutting taxes and red tape in order to help small business and create jobs grow? Seriously? You know, these are such canned questions. I'm getting really frustrated at this point. Number five, Congressman Lukemeyer supports repealing the president's health care law in its entirety. Do you? Okay, you know, what are you doing about it, Blaine? Repeal the thing. Lead the march. I sent you there to lead that march. Do you support and all of the above energy strategy, including increased domestic drilling in order to reduce our dependence on foreign oil? This stuff is all out, straight out of the Republican Party platform, and not one Republican in Washington, D.C. is pushing this platform at all. While I don't know how much it costs to send out these questionnaires, but I'm seeing nothing coming from anybody there. Do you support immigration reform? Okay, and then it has yes, no, unsure, yes, if the border is secured first. Okay, correct me if I'm wrong, and feel free to send me an email. Contact me through MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. We can have this debate. I'm fine with it. I do not necessarily support immigration reform. I think the current laws that we have in place are probably sufficient to get the job done. Why we feel we have to reform it at this point, in my opinion, is only to save the skin of elected officials so that they can continue to get reelected and not offend anybody. Because we don't have anybody in Washington, D.C. who has the backbone or any other anatomy to go and lead the charge and do what's right and enforce the laws. Okay, and then the last question, and by the time I read this, I was boiling. The following areas make up the vast majority of the federal budget. Which areas should be reformed to put our country on a more sound fiscal path? And then it lists education, Social Security, Medicare, welfare programs, environmental programs, defense, foreign aid, no reforms, raise taxes, Medicaid, and other, please specify. Really? Really? Are they asking these questions? Why do we have a Department of Education? Social Security is a mess. Welfare has driven the train right off the tracks into the ravine or off the rails. Environmental programs, Agenda 21. Nobody's doing a thing about that. Defense. Well, we've cut defense. You know, we're sitting ducks as far as I can see. Foreign aid. Yeah, let's send some more guns to Benghazi. You know, let's run some more guns. That'll be good. And Medicaid, you know, come on, seriously. So, Blaine Lukemeyer, you're going to get my survey back in the mail. I'm going to have some comments in there for you to read, and we'll see if you respond, you know, if anybody's really paying attention or if this is just lip service. And I'll let you know. I'll send this back to Blaine Lukemeyer, and I'll report back to you, and I'll let you know if he contacts me with a response. You know, I have a lot of friends who really like Blaine Lukemeyer. And, you know, he's a very nice guy, but as far as I can see, there's not a whole lot of good stuff coming from him or anybody else in Washington, D.C. I don't want to fire just straight at him. I don't see anybody really doing much of anything. You know, we have a lot of congressmen and women coming from the state of Missouri. I haven't seen anything that I liked really from any of them. A couple other things. Right before the show started today, I was surfing the internet, and I have not had the opportunity to follow as closely over the last week the Department of Revenue hearings, but I did click on Missouri Torch. And by the way, if you haven't had the opportunity to go to the Missouri Torch, they have done an absolutely fabulous job of covering this issue. They cover a lot of great issues. They've been live streaming the hearings, and here it is, folks. Get ready, because here's what's going to happen. And I told you this a couple of weeks ago. They are not going to impeach Jay Nixon. They are going to let this thing go. These hearings are a smokescreen to divert your attention long enough so that you'll forget about it and nothing will happen. Because what happened in today's hearings was just, remember a few years ago when Clinton was in office and, you know, he was going through the impeachment and the whole thing, the whole famous, what is the definition of is? It all depends on what the definition of is. This is what's going to get Jay Nixon off the hook. Because in this article in the Missouri Torch, it says, Nixon counsel says they can implement Real ID as long as they're not implementing Real ID. And he's got some streaming in here of some of the live streaming, and I was listening to it before the show. Here's what this is all going to boil down to. Just get ready, because here it comes. Okay, he testified that as long as the action that furthered the compliance with Real ID were taken, but not taken, in quotes, in order to comply with Real ID, they were completely legal. So basically, the gist of his entire testimony, and this is Edward R. Ardini Jr., counsel to the governor, made the case yesterday to the bipartisan investigative committee for privacy protection and special interim committee on privacy and protection, that three words change everything: in order to. And basically what he's saying is, as long as you are complying, as long as, even if the Department of Revenue is acting in accordance with everything on the checklist that complies with Real ID, that they are not breaking the law because their intent was not to comply with Real ID. So basically, they can line everything up, they can complete all the actions, they can do it all, but if that was not their intent, then they weren't doing anything illegal. And that's what it's going to come down to. Remember those words, folks. In order to. That's what it's going to come down to. What is the definition of is? Get ready, folks. It's coming. I told you it was coming. It's coming. That's where it's going to end up. Absolutely amazing to me how these things, it just absolutely amazing to me how these things can happen. I just do not understand. We need to start sending letters, emails, phone calls, folks, to your state representatives. They have so much information on the scandal, on the Department of Revenue scandal, and all of the illustration of how they have complied with Real ID. They've got a letter from Janet Napolitano thanking the governor for complying with Real ID. They're admitting that they acted in compliance with Real ID all over the place, but they're going to let them off the hook because of those three words. It's coming. That's where they're going to lay it, folks. You're not going to see anything come out of this. They should be impeaching Governor Jay Nixon, and I don't see fire in the belly. I'll eat crow right here on this show and say I was wrong. If they bring impeachment proceedings against Jay Nixon, I will definitely eat crow. I will be happy to do that. But I don't see it coming, folks. I think that this is all a bunch of smoke and mirrors, and I think they're going to let it rest. Last week, let's see here. Last week, if you listened to the show last week, you heard Marinka Peshman. Go to marinkapeshman.com. That woman is just a bulldog reporter. She is absolutely wonderful. She does a great job of ferreting out the details. She has been following the NSA issue and sending FOIA requests in. And last week on my show here, she reported that she was getting the runaround and being stonewalled by the federal government on all the FOIA requests that she was sending out. She can't get information. And what they were telling her was that her FOIA requests would cause a breach in national security. Well, it just so happens that I got an email today from a friend. Let me see if I can find it here. Oh, and it looks like Edward Snowden is looking more positive that he's going to get sanctuary in Russia. They're going to give him documents, or today they released documents for him to apply. Anyway, the Department of Defense, the National Security, is sending out a standard boilerplate form to everyone that requests any information about their records. I got an email from someone, and it had a link to a website, and I'll show you. I'll post it up at Missouri Grassroots later after the show. Someone requested their information through through the Freedom of Information Act to find out what information was gathered on them that was, you know, the NSA was gathering on them through the prison program. And basically, here's what they got. They got a three-page letter. And basically what they said, although these two programs have been publicly acknowledged, details about them remain classified and protected from release by statutes to prevent harm to the national security of the United States. To the extent that your request seeks any metadata, call data records on you, and or any telephone numbers provided in your request or seeks intelligence information on you, we cannot acknowledge the existence or non-existence of such metadata or call detail records pertaining to the telephone numbers you provided or based on your name. Any positive or negative response on a request-by-request basis would allow our adversaries to accumulate information and draw conclusions about NSA's technical capabilities, sources, and methods. Our adversaries are likely to evaluate all public responses related to these programs. Were we to provide positive or negative responses to such requests as yours, our adversaries' compilation of the information provided would reasonably be expected to cause exceptionally grave damage to the national security. And I sent this to Marinka. She confirmed that's the same response that she got when she sent in her FOIA requests. The NSA department has a boilerplate letter. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe we all ought to just kind of bombard the NSA with freedom of information requests and see what they have to say about that. And also contact our senators and our congressmen and women in Washington, D.C. and see what they have to say about these boilerplate responses. I think it's quite interesting that we are getting the runaround, and that a freedom of information request could compromise national security. Who knows, folks? It just gets stranger and stranger every single day. Okay, we'll move on. Folks, we have a pretty good show lined up for you tonight. We have a full lineup. If you will remember, a few months back in April, we had Lauren Spivak, the free market warrior, come to the St. Louis area. He gave a fantastic two-night seminar here to the folks in St. Charles County, very well attended, and I'm telling you, if you missed it, he's coming back. He's coming back at the end of August. Don't miss this seminar. It's a continuation on the seminar that he gave in April. If you missed the April seminar, you are not going to miss anything. He assures me that this is a great continuation. You'll be able to pick up and run with it. We have Lauren Spivak with us tonight. He's going to be our first guest, and he's going to give us an overview of what he's going to present to us in late August. And great news, I mean, if you're not in St. Charles County, you don't have to worry about missing Lauren Spivak, because he's going to be all over the state of Missouri. Thanks to the nice folks at CWA, they've got him booked all over the place. And he's also going to be at the St. Charles County Pachyderms meeting in September. So I am going to post all of that information up at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, and you'll be able to get a hold of Lauren somewhere in the state of Missouri over the next couple of months. Let's see. Brent Stafford. Oh, I also want to tell you, we had a terrible loss in the November election in St. Charles County as well. We lost the right to elect our sheriff. And actually what happened was, at the last minute, the county council approved a measure to be put on the ballot that would drastically diminish the duties of the St. Charles County sheriff and give the power to the county executive to appoint a police chief. And we fought very hard to educate the folks in like less than 8 weeks about what damage this would do to our freedoms, and we lost that initiative by 1% of the vote. Well, the folks at the St. Charles County Liberty Project have got answers for you, and we're going to have Brent Stafford on a little bit later to talk about how we can hopefully turn that initiative around. We've got a plan, we're going to need some help, and he's going to talk to us about that. And I'm very excited. I can't wait to tell you folks. The Politichicks are going to be on tonight. Now, you folks know I write for Politichicks.tv, and all three of the head Politichick ladies are going to be on with us tonight. They've got some great things going on that they want to tell you about. They've got a hot list that they're going to explain, and I just can't tell you how excited I am to have them on. Anne-Marie Morrell, Morgan Brittany, and my friend Gina Loudon are all going to be here. We're going to talk about all of the great things that Politichicks has got moving on. And at the end of the show, we are going to wrap up with Tom March from the Lock and Smith Foundation. We've got some more Yankee Doodle legislation going on, and Tom will be on with us to explain all of that. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Lauren Spivak.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
The affirmative task we have now is to create a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions, the rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nigger, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And I am thrilled to death to be able to tell you folks that Lauren Spivak is coming back to Missouri. He was so well received when he was here in April. He gives an amazing seminar on free market principles. And let me tell you, too, before we bring him on, if you missed this seminar and you have an opportunity to see Lauren in Missouri, take your kids. I took my high school daughter, and I'm telling you, this is a great opportunity for high school kids who go to institutional schools. You know, even if your kids don't go to institutional schools or homeschool, this is a fabulous opportunity for them to get this side of what free market principles are that they're not going to get anywhere else. Lauren, thank you for being with me tonight.
Well, thank you, and particularly the homeschool kids. They ask the best questions.
They really do. I mean, we had a few kids in the audience the last time you were here in April, and I'm telling you, I will confess, I kind of had to drag my daughter to the seminar. She's thinking, oh, Mom, this is just not going to be fun. She was thoroughly entertained by your presentation, and she really got a lot out of it. And I'm telling you, you know, if you think that the talking about, you know, free markets and finances is a dull, drying evening, it is not with Lauren Spivak. It was a great couple of evenings.
Yeah, well, the thing that people need to realize is economics, you know, is not about numbers. It's about humans. It's a very significant component to what makes us human and how we coordinate with each other in human society. And it's really fascinating.
So, Lauren, you have been touring the country. You were here in April, and you're coming back here in August and September. Your first seminar laid out beautifully free market principles, the history of free market, where we've gone astray. What can we expect when you come back in August?
Well, the second seminar, and it's funny, I'm in California. I'm about to do in here in Northern California what we're going to be doing at the end of August with you guys in Missouri. It's a very different program. It's called Getting There from Here, and it's about about building a roadmap to restoring constitutional governance in the United States. Basically, after the last election, you know, everyone I knew all over the country was communicating to me a great deal of despair. And I don't like despair. I think despair is the work of the devil, and it accomplishes nothing. And we need to move forward and have a clear sense of where we're going and what we're looking for politically. And this seminar touches on almost every area I can think of that relates to that. It's about how we can win elections nationwide with conservative small government principles. It's about how to build and broaden a coalition, a majority coalition that's committed to having a smaller government. in a really smaller government. And that's the first half, the first night I call building a permanent majority coalition for freedom. And then the second night I call dismantling the monstrosity, and it's about how practically to shrink the federal government, I mean really shrink the federal government, without having, you know, political problems along the way. And what I think everyone understands is that if you get into power and you start just, you know, ripping the federal government to shreds, which is, you know, very appealing to me on many levels, that if things look like they're getting worse instead of better, you're just going to lose the next election. You need to do it in a smart way where people are happy and people are benefiting by what you're doing. You need to make sure the benefits of a smaller government are getting clearly expressed all the way along the way.
Go ahead.
Sure, go ahead. What's your question?
That's it right there. I think that if you talk to politicians or anybody who, you know, an elected person, they're so worried about doing anything because they're afraid of hurting somebody. You know, they can't please everybody. And I think that sums it up right there in a nutshell. How do you, and because government is such a big damn mess and almost half of the people are on the government dole, how do you start slashing things without hurting somebody and keeping people happy?
Well, that is the question, and I think part of what hampers us, you know, I tell people that we have a two-party system in America. We have an evil party, and we have a stupid party. And most of this seminar is about fixing the stupid party. Okay, I don't know what I can do for the evil party, but I'm trying to make the stupid one less stupid. I know as a student of political science that the Republican Party is going to have to be the vehicle by which we're going to achieve whatever success we're going to achieve. I know people who say, well, let's have a third party. They don't work. It just doesn't work in American politics. If I thought it would work, I'd be in favor of it. But it doesn't. It needs to be via the Republican Party, but we need a much, much smarter Republican Party and one that's not scared of its own shadow. We need to have people who are seriously committed to constitutional principles, to family values, to a smaller government, running the Republican Party, and we need to have strategies which is what the whole seminar is about, where we can make sure the benefits of smaller government are going straight to people, so they're appreciating that, and we need to do a heck of a lot better job communicating. One of the things I think that kills us is that the Democrats are so much better at communicating than Republicans are. So you have Obama running around today. Saying that the Republicans have no plan, you know, for the economy. Well, you know, somebody has no plan for the economy, and I think his name is Barack Obama. You know, the audacity is just breathtaking. But we're not doing a good enough job of communicating with a broad American populace, and that's also a big part of what we need to do better.
Oh, absolutely. So, you have a plan. Can you kind of just give us a sneak peek, a little bit, about what your plan is?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we talk about a whole lot of things. We talk about dealing with minimizing voter fraud. Mm-hmm. We talk about how to pick the right Republican leaders. I mean, one of the issues, if you remember my first seminar, I love analogies. And in the first one, I talk a lot about cancer, how the government has really become a cancer that's consuming our economy. And in this one, I talk a lot about alcoholism, which is a very different disease. But politicians get to Washington and they become alcoholics, and they can't understand how they could do anything but grow the government. And, you know, it's like we need to have an intervention with the government. We need to say, you know, you're out of control. You are an alcoholic. And you tell that to your congressman, and he's like, well, you know, we're gonna phase out my alcohol consumption over the next 10 years. But, you know, first, you know, I just ran out of scotch, so first thing I got to do is go to the liquor store. And then when I come back, we can talk about how we're going to, you know, phase out my drinking problem. That's where most people in Washington are holding right now. So it's about the necessity of eliminating government programs instead of cutting them. Because when you cut government programs, they just grow faster. Mm-hmm. Because you leave the constituency in place. Okay? There's a group of people who live off of every single government program. If you cut it by 20%, they stay there and they lobby for it, and they're going to beat you in the long run because you'll move on to something else. You have to eliminate the programs that need to get eliminated, because otherwise the constituency is going to stay in place. It's going to come back and defeat you. If you eliminate it, then the constituency goes away. They have to go get another job. They have to get a real life and get going. And 6 months later, they've forgotten about it. So it's that sort of thing. And we talk about handling Social Security and Medicare and other entitlements. We talk about, in fact, in one part, go department by department. What's fascinating is even, you know, conservative Republicans, people like Paul Ryan, who is allegedly a Tea Party favorite, just released a budget plan where he increases government spending 3% every year forever. Because Paul Ryan apparently thinks that the government is not big enough, that Obama's not spending enough. And this is a guy who is considered to be a hero of the conservatives. And you know, and this is not a compromise. This is not something he had to compromise on. This is his plan out of the start he did. He cuts nothing. And the waste, the programs that are really destructive to the economy are just everywhere. It's far harder to find a government program that's doing any good at all than it is to find examples of ones that are, in fact, making us all poorer. So we talk about how the deficit is not the problem. The government's the problem. It makes us poorer. It sucks the life out of the economy. And very, very few people in Washington really understand that.
And, you know, your message is so common sense. I can remember sitting in your last seminar and thinking, you know, this is the kind of stuff that I heard when I was young, and I'm a little older, and, you know, I know that the subsequent generations growing up are not quite have not gotten that message. I don't think my kids got that message in the culture. You know, I homeschooled them. We tried to teach them a little bit differently, but you know, that our culture has deviated so far from that message. And when you were speaking those fabulous terms, it just makes so much sense. How are you being received when you go out and you reverberate that fresh, new, old idea?
Oh, I've had a great reception. I've done my original seminar now in 20 states, from Maine to Southern California. And I think I've added 3 states just in the last couple months. And it's been great. One of the things that surprised me is as time has gone on, I've gotten more and more critical of the Republican Party in a loving kind of way, but critical. And I speak to a lot of specifically Republican groups. You know, this is like the Republican committee of such and such county. And at first I thought they wouldn't like it, that I came in there and spent the night criticizing the Republicans. But I was wrong. I've had just the opposite reaction. They're thrilled. The great divide in the Republican Party seems to be between a few hundred Republicans in Washington, on one hand, and everybody else. The millions and millions of Republicans all over the country really want to have a smaller government. The problem is a tiny, tiny percentage who happen to be holding elective office who are the alcoholics. They just can't imagine living without this. A teeny tiny example, you know, the Senate has a senators-only elevator. Only senators get to ride on it.
Oh, how lovely.
Isn't it nice? Well, that elevator has an elevator operator. It actually has a whole team because it operates 24 hours a day. And there's operators in there. And it's a perfectly modern, normal elevator where you just push the button and it lights up and it goes to that floor. But the senators don't push the button. The operator, okay, as if this were 1920 and running an elevator was a big, complicated job. Do you know how much we spend on that?
Oh, my gosh,
the
I'm afraid to ask.
The budget for the senators-only elevator operators is $1.2 million a year.
Yerk, I want that job.
Okay.
I would work a double shift.
Okay, and they push away, and obviously it's not for one person, it's a whole team. They've got someone on duty all the time. But this is the kind of insanity. The Republicans have been in charge of the House. You can't spend money without the House of Representatives for 3 years now. Why are we still doing this? You know, what are they worrying that the Democrats are going to, you know, campaign against them because they cut back on senators? The closer you get to Washington, the harder it is just to look at this soberly. And somebody needs to start with us.
Okay. Lauren Spivak is coming to St. Charles County on August 29th and 30th. And he'll be everywhere. And actually, I'll post all of this information up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. You can already see on the calendar page on our website the information for his 29th and 30th seminar. Bev Allen from Concerned Women of America is dragging you all over the state of Missouri, beginning on September 23rd. Yeah, you got to take your vitamins to keep up with Bev. I don't know how she does it, but she does an amazing job. She's gonna take Lauren. He'll be in St. Louis County on September 23rd. They're driving up to Kirksville on the 24th. They'll be in Fulton on the 24th, St. Joseph on the 25th, and Harrisonville on the 25th. And on the 26th, they'll be in Springfield. And back here in St. Charles County for the Pachyderms meeting in St. Charles County at Donatelli's Bistro at 6:30. And on the 27th, they're going back down to Cape Girardeau. Are there any other events in the area that we don't know about yet, Lauren?
There's a pack. The St. Pachyderm you mentioned. So,
yeah.
So I've got that, and there's a Pachyderm group in somewhere in the south. I'm talking to. We haven't pinned out a date yet.
Okay.
But, I will keep you posted, and I'll have my new book with me. My new book, The Gorax, came out, and it's about how environmentalism is wrecking the economy, and ultimately, ironically, it's wrecking the environment.
Absolutely, and that's very true, very true. Okay, we will have all of this information up for you at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, all of these dates and where to go to see Lauren. And by the way, his seminar is free of charge. Lauren does not charge for these seminars, so there is no excuse for you folks to come out and get this great information and to see Lauren. When you come out, tell him I sent you. We're so happy to have you coming back to Missouri, Lauren. And if there are any groups out there within the sound of my voice that you want to book Lauren, contact me here at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Contact me here at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and we will put you on to Lauren, and he is very happy to speak to your group.
Absolutely. As schedule permitting, I'll go anywhere.
Okay, absolutely fabulous. Lauren, thank you so much for being with us tonight. I so look forward to having you back here in St. Charles County. Please keep us posted on how things are going, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Okay, very good.
Thanks, Lauren. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Brent Stafford of St. Charles County, St. Charles County Liberty Project.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. I've got a feeling that the
tide is turning. This is Lisa Payne.
Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. And this evening, we're happy to have with us Brent Stafford. Brent Stafford is with the St. Charles County Liberty Project. And as you know, if you follow us at all, last fall during the elections, St. Charles County had a serious initiative on the ballot here where we narrowly lost the right of the citizens to elect our sheriff in this county. A lot of history behind that. We'll have Brent explain that to you. But the St. Charles County Liberty Project has come up with an initiative to reverse that very bad decision that happened in November. And it's a great initiative, and we're very glad that they've started it. So we want to talk to Brent about that. Thanks for being with me tonight, Brent.
No problem.
Okay. First of all, let's lay down a little history. You guys, the St. Charles County Liberty Project, first tell me a little bit about you guys, what you do, and then we'll get into the history of this sheriff's issue.
Sure. Yeah, the St. Charles County Liberty Project, it kind of came together a little over a year ago as, you know, some much people who were involved in the different presidential campaigns and were of a liberty mindset. And then once the elections were over, you know, felt like we still wanted to be involved in advocating for, you know, liberty, and so we created this organization called the St. Charles County Liberty Project, and we've done a number of things over the past year, and like you said, most notably was one of our big the first efforts was the Save Our Sheriff effort to prevent what happened from happening with our sheriff.
Okay, well, let's go into detail. Let's do a little refresher. Let's bring the history back of what happened last November, because it was a shady deal put forth by the county council and the county executive last fall. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was actually it was our current sheriff Tom Meir who actually requested this, and he actually approached the city the county executive and the county council with this idea of creating a county police department. So actually the bill that was put forward, it literally says at the top of the page, the very first thing requested by Sheriff Tom Meir, and even in their whereas statement, it says, whereas the Sheriff of St. Charles County has requested that this body consider placing before the voters the creation of a county police department and assigning certain law enforcement duties to that agency and certain duties to the office of sheriff. And so, and it goes on from there. So this was absolutely initiated by Sheriff Tom Meir, and as proven in the actual bill on the very first page. So there's speculation on his motives, but what would happen if he were to, seek this new position of county police chief is that the county executive would appoint that police chief, and the county council would then approve them, and then only with a vote of four of the seven county councilmen or members, county council members, could they be removed. So basically, instead of having to run for election and be accountable to the people for his actions as sheriff, now he was trying to set himself up as being the appointed head of a county police department, answerable really only to four people, because it takes four people to remove him, it takes four people to keep him from being removed out of the seven. So all he's got to do is keep four out of seven of the county council members happy, and he will never lose his job.
And it was it's a nice, cozy little arrangement, and we're used to those kind of cozy arrangements here in St. Charles County. Okay, so let's back up and talk about, because a lot of people, the lay people, the people who are not really politically engaged, do not really understand what the difference is between having an elected sheriff in your county and having an appointed police chief. And let's talk a little bit about why it's really important for maintaining your personal liberty and protection against government to have a sheriff.
Sure. Well, let me start off by talking about police chiefs. police chiefs are, like what we're talking about with this proposed change, which is set to take place in January 2015. But let's take your city police chief. The mayor or city administrator of your city will recommend someone to be the police chief, and then the that council or board of aldermen then approve them. Municipalities and counties are really corporations, because you always hear about, well, I live in unincorporated St. Charles County. Okay, that means that where you live is not in a corporation. Okay, but when you live in a municipality, an incorporated community, okay,
mm-hmm.
Think of it like a corporation. So the board of directors of that corporation creates rules for how things operate within that corporate boundary. And so the police are not there to advocate for your rights. They are there to enforce the corporate rules, the municipal code, those things. So they are really they are the city's, or in no other case but St. Louis County, they are that governmental body's police force. Okay, they answer to the bureaucrats only. They answer to the fact the corporate board. Okay, by city council or board of aldermen, or county council in the case of St. Louis County. Now, a sheriff, on the other hand, is not answerable to a governmental body at all. The sheriff is only answerable to the people. He's elected by the people, he or she is elected by the people, and is only responsible to them. The sheriff is there to uphold the Constitution. They swear an oath to the Constitution. A lot of people do, but the sheriff actually, that is his main duty. And again, it's answerable to the people. So if you don't like what your sheriff is doing, not only can you vote for someone else to take his place or her place, but you can run for it yourself. You can run for sheriff yourself. And if you feel that you have the ability to carry out, the job duties of sheriff. So it is absolutely the people's police, answerable only to the people. The sheriff takes orders from no one. There's no one, there is no boss above the sheriff other than the people. The federal government cannot order a sheriff to do something. County councilmen cannot order a sheriff to do something. County executive cannot order a county sheriff to do anything. So they are an independent body, answerable only to the people. And that is what was lost last November with this charter amendment, that the county sheriff, who's answerable only to the people of St. Charles County, who is their employee directly,
right,
was taken away, and in its place, a new bureaucratic agency where the chief of police is a political appointment.
And there was a lot of question last fall. It was done very quickly. It was sprung on the county council at the last minute, just a month or two before the election. And there was a lot of question as to how much it was going to cost to make this change. And I mean, there were a lot. Not only is it an affront to your liberties and your personal safety, but it's an affront to you as a taxpayer and all of the things that go into running a department like that. There were a lot of reasons that this should not have taken place last year, and there was a lot of speculation. There were no studies done at the last minute to really give the people definite answers how much this was going to cost the taxpayers. There was a lot of unanswered questions, right?
Sure. Yeah, there were a lot of issues with this. I'll kind of touch on some of the ones you brought up. The fact that it was brought up near the election and rushed through without normal due process was a problem. And Rich Krismer, the director of elections for St. Charles County, had a big problem with it. Okay, he also had a big problem with the same manner and the same method was used to attempt to put a countywide smoking ban on the ballot. And apparently, in talking with Mr. Krismer, he felt both of them had undergone the same poor process and should not have been on the ballot. But because of how close the election that this all happened, he only had the ability and the time, because of deadlines, to file the necessary legal challenges on only one of the two, and he ended up fighting the smoking ban and kept that off the ballot. If he'd have an extra week, you know, he probably would have got them both kept off the ballot. But I think because of the short time, he was only allowed to address one properly. So that's how it ended up on the ballot. He was not happy it was on the ballot. Now, the other point you made was the cost. And there have been no cost analysis at all. Even to this day, there's no cost estimate. To create a new police department is going to be absolutely expensive. There was nothing in here to transfer the property of the sheriff's department in as far as equipment and vehicles and arms and things from the sheriff's department to this new county police department. So at the very least, you're looking at cars and their typical equipment, their daily equipment, and then probably additional computer systems. And you're creating a completely new structure of government within the county. How that can't cost anything is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
You know? And so there were no estimates on how much this was going to cost, and there still aren't. So that's a big problem.
Yeah, and it should always be a red flag to anybody when government wants to move that quickly on something, because we know how slowly they move on issues that we want to have done. You know, when we want Obamacare repealed, when we want, when we want taxes repealed, those kinds of things, government moves very slowly. But this was done within a matter of weeks. This was put before the people. And I do want to say, and I'm not sure if it was the Liberty Project or what group, what organization initiated a public education. There was some pushback on this, and there was a great effort made by a few of the citizens in the county to educate the rest of the citizenry on this ballot issue, and you did very well with it. I mean, we narrowly lost the election. I think if we had had more time, which I think was the whole purpose of pushing this in so quickly at the last minute, that a lot of people who understood the issue would have voted against it, and we would not have lost that right last November.
Sure. The St. Charles County Liberty Project did take a big role in the education process. I'm not going to claim that they were the only ones doing it, but the St. Charles County Liberty Project did coordinate a very large countywide effort on education, and did door-to-door efforts and literature drops and going to different events and handing out information about the issue. So, yeah, the St. Charles County Liberty Project did make that a very big part of what we were doing last year, and our big effort, it was Save Our Sheriff effort is basically what we were calling it.
Right.
And so I don't know that we were the only ones, but we were definitely out there doing that, sure.
Yeah, and it literally was by a hair's breadth, folks. I mean, we lost by a little over 1,000 votes, I think. It was very close. So
actually, I've got that information. Let's see. It was 1,154 votes total. So it was 50.36% voted yes, 49.64% voted no. So it was less than 1%.
Yeah.
Difference there. And the other thing I want to address too is the ballot language last year was very confusing. And I've talked to a number of people who thought they were voting to maintain the sheriff, and because of the way the language was written, they voted the wrong way. Or I actually talked to a gentleman who he wanted to keep the sheriff as it was. But when he was in the ballot, the voting booth, looking at that ballot, And he reread the language several times, and he couldn't figure out which way to vote to keep the sheriff. So he didn't vote at all on that question, because he was afraid he would vote the wrong way.
Yeah.
So the ballot language was purposely confusing, in my opinion.
Right. So the Liberty Project is stepping up. Very glad to hear it. You've got an initiative. Tell me about what you guys are trying to do here.
Sure. What happened with the election was it was a charter amendment, okay? So the only way to fix that is to do a ballot, put a question on the ballot to basically repeal that previous decision and amend the charter back to the way it was before what passed. So we have to gather petitions to put that on the ballot, and that'll be on the ballot in November of 2014, which is only a couple of months before this is supposed to go into effect. So this is literally our last chance to stop this from happening. So it's going to be kind of a two-stage process. The first part will be gathering the petition signatures to get it on the ballot, and then once it's on the ballot, then the Charles County Liberty Project will renew that kind of education push that we did preceding the last election on the issue. So we'll be out doing the same kinds of things, going door to door, going to events, things to tell people that they should vote yes on the County Sheriff Preservation Initiative. And that's actually what it will be called on the ballot, the County Sheriff Preservation Initiative.
Okay, awesome. So you're going to need some help with this. First of all, it takes a little training to get people to help you with this ballot, with getting these petitions signed. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm going to be doing training throughout the petition gathering process, and I'll start doing public training for this starting here in a few weeks. I'll probably do a couple of them in August and some more in September and continue throughout the process as people volunteer. It's important to give some training on this, how to do this. It doesn't seem like it's that hard to just get someone to write their name down, but there are specific things that they need to do when they do it, and there's a number of ways if they fill it out wrong that it can be invalidated. So we don't want to spend all the time going out and getting the signatures and then have what are in effect typos or just errors in filling out the signature form to cost us the initiative. So there's training needs to be done with people who are going to go out and get the signatures on how to get that petition form out properly. And it has to be notarized. We've got people with the Liberty Project who are notaries to deal with that. And also to educate them on the issue itself, on what happened last year, what we're trying to do this year, why it matters, what is a constitutional sheriff, and why should we care, that kind of thing, so that when they are going and talking to people to get them to sign, that they're up to speed on the issue. So the training is a crucial part of the effort for getting the signatures.
And on your website, I have your website up here, sccLibertyProject.com. There's a form right at the bottom of the website where you can get social with Liberty Project. You can drop them a line, give them your information there, and you can also sign up for email updates as well to contact the Liberty Project to volunteer to help in this great effort, because I'm telling you, folks, we lost a great liberty here in St. Charles County last November. And with the state of affairs, as serious as it is right now, you do not want governmental police forces, a police force, looking over you. You want a sheriff who answers to the people in your county. You need to contact these folks at sccLibertyProject.com and get involved with this initiative and help St. Charles County get their sheriff's department back.
And that's our Liberty Project page, and that we talk about all the various things we do. We put on other events. We just held a event last weekend to educate people on Agenda 21 and Common Core. We did a monetary conference to teach people about monetary and economic things, you know. So we do a lot of different events throughout the year, so that would be good to keep up on that. We've also got some sites specific for the Sheriff's Initiative as well. We have a Facebook group, and it's the St. Charles County Sheriff Preservation Initiative is the name on that. And then we also have a web page for the Save Our Sheriff effort, and it's SaveOurSheriffDEPT.com. So SaveOurSheriffDepartment.com, DEPT. And those are places where people can go for specific information just on the sheriff's petition initiative, and then again, and the lead up to the election where they can learn more about the issue. So everything related to the sheriff's, the county sheriff preservation initiative will be on those. And if you want to learn more about the Liberty Project as a whole, then the other page you said is a good one to go to. I also have an email set up for the sheriff preservation effort, and it's sheriffpreservation@gmail.com. And we also have a phone number, and it's 636-388-8SOS for Save Our Sheriff. So 636-388-8767 or 8SOS. So people can call if they've got questions, they'd like. So we've got a lot of ways to contact. You can contact us through Facebook, contact us through the website on the Save Our Sheriff department.com. There's a form you can fill out, and we'll contact you if you'd like to help out with that as well. Or like send an email, or call me, whatever. We're going to need a lot of help. This is a pretty big undertaking. We need to get a little shy of 20,000 signatures to be safe. It's less than that that's required, but we need to get, gather extras just in case they're invalid for one reason or another. So 20,000 signatures is a pretty big task for our group. So we are definitely going to be reaching out to other groups and individuals to give us a hand. And the union that represents the Sheriff's Department, they are very much in favor of what we're doing, and I expect to get some help from the union in our efforts as well.
Excellent. You guys are on top of it. Okay, Brent, I hope you'll come back and keep us updated on the effort, and you guys can have all the airtime you want here on my channel to kind of keep us updated and to get the word out on this very important initiative. Thank you so much.
Yeah. One other thing I want to mention to you is it was very interesting. Here in St. Charles County, if we are not successful in our effort, we will have lost our constitutional sheriff in O'Fallon. Right. St. Charles County. Just in this past June, the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association had their national convention in St. Charles County just a month and a half ago, in a county that's now potentially going to lose that type of a sheriff. And it's a little bit ironic. You've got these guys who are your constitutional sheriffs from all over the country.
Right.
You take their oath of office seriously, and they reiterated time and time and time again over that weekend that they serve the people only, and that they are the last line of defense of federal encroachment or governmental encroachment, because again, the sheriff's department is not a governmental agency. They're outside of government bureaucracy. So they are the last line of defense of people against tyrannical government, and they have a convention here in the county that may be losing that very ability. So I'm hoping that they come back next year and have the convention here again in time to help us with this effort to save our sheriff.
Absolutely, that would be wonderful. Yeah, I was at that conference, and Sheriff Mack was a fabulous role model for that initiative, and we'd love to be able to hear from him on this issue too as well. Hopefully, we
can. Yeah, he was well aware of what's going on here with our sheriff, and I not only from him, but from other sheriffs, got some commitments that they will help when the time comes and when I need them to help, and so I will be taking them all up on their generous offers to aid in our efforts. So I'm not sure now is quite the time, but soon I would expect us to be drawing on their support.
Okay. Brent, if you'll send me all of that contact information, I'll put that up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. You can get that information and contact the Liberty Project through MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And, Brent, come on again very soon and keep us updated on your efforts. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
We're going to be right back. We have the politics on hold, and I'll take a listen to these messages from MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there are certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes, walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
That's right. We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and I am very excited about this next segment. I should have done this a long time ago, but circumstances just didn't align, but I can't tell you how excited I am to have these three ladies on with me tonight. As most of you know, I've been writing for politichicks.tv for a little while now, and it's just a fabulous, fabulous news outlet that it's fairly new. It hasn't been around for that long, but Anne-Marie Morrell has put together a fabulous staff of people from across the country. She's got bloggers from all over the United States contributing to this great resource here, news and information from every aspect and every angle all across the country. We cover everything, you know, Common Core. We cover state and local issues. We cover everything on the national spectrum. She's done a fabulous job of putting people together. Along with her is Morgan Brittany and our friend Dr. Gina Loudon. Of the three of those ladies together are the main driving force behind Politichicks. They're all the anchors for Politichicks.tv, and they are all here with me this evening, and I can't thank them enough. Thank you, ladies, for being here with me tonight.
Oh, it's good to be here.
So happy to be here.
It's an honor.
Hey, girls. Hi.
Hi.
It's Anne-Marie. Hi.
So one of the things that Politichicks.tv does best is kind of you guys go out there and you kind of stir the pot a little bit. You ask people to get involved, and the reason that one of the main reasons I have you on here tonight is because you've comprised a great list of journalists across the country, but the reality is you guys are on top of all the news angles. We've got Dr. Gina. We know Dr. Gina very well. She's been on the show before. She's here from St. Louis. We know her from the St. Louis Tea Party here. But you ladies are you got your finger on the pulse of everything. And let's just kind of first, I guess, we'll talk about this hot list that's been put together by Politichicks TV.
Okay, well, take it away, Marie.
Well, first of all, I want to know whose brainchild this was. Whose idea was this to put this list together?
Well,
it was a complete collaborative effort. The only one that wasn't here for our big slumber party was Morgan. She should have been at the house. It was so much fun. But we also had three outside judges. To be, uh-huh. you know, somewhat fair and not just politic biased. And we had Scotty Nail Hughes and Bev Zaslow and Tabitha Hale. But
okay,
it was really fun.
Yeah, you know what this is? It's Politichicks pick for the hottest conservative supermen in America.
Great idea, I think, that Anne-Marie came up with here, because what they did is everybody just kind of looked objectively at these men, and it wasn't like the liberal spin, which is usually, oh, who's the best looking, who's the, what, you know, physically looking. Mm-hmm. The thing that it was based on was the intelligence and the sexiness that was brought out by the intelligence and the absolute patriotism of these men and the love for their country and all of these things and how passionate they are about doing, you know, doing the right thing, getting the country back on the right track. To me, that is one of the sexiest things. And it doesn't, it has very little to do with an outer layer. It's a total package. It's a total inner layer. Of course they're sexy, of course they're beautiful anyway, but it's that whole package that Anne-Marie kind of structured and all the ladies voted on.
Well, and what I thought, go ahead, Anne-Marie.
Oh, no. Well, that's Gina talking. I was just going to talk about your article, Gina, that you wrote in response to the response we got from Huffington Post and Wonkette. Gina wrote this great article for WND. Gina, you take on that.
Well, I was so, you know, we immediately got the backlash from the left, from these women who say that there's a Republican war on women and that all Republicans think about is what is temporal and, you know, what has to do with money and what has to do with flesh. But really, you know, it's interesting because they didn't pause hardly at all to look at what our criteria were. And Anne-Marie, actually, this was brilliant. I mean, few people in media are as brilliant as this woman, and she's so underestimated, mostly because she's not good at tooting her own horn, and she's very humble. And that really is her greatest fault, because I'll tell you, this was brilliant. She said we were basing it on things like character, on courage of conviction, on passion. And yes, ultimately, someone who exudes sexiness or hotness, in our opinion, is someone who marries all those things together and then manages to communicate it well. That's our definition of sexy. And Anne-Marie enumerated those traits and did the best job of spelling that out. So it was so, so easy to come right back at HuffPo and Wonkette and say, you know, go ahead and say that our guys aren't sexy. You would know sexy if it whacked you upside the head. And that's precisely what I tried to do in that WND article.
Well, we've all seen them.
They have Anthony Weiner. That's who they think is sexy. So there you go.
Well, we've all seen the internet video of the hot conservative women, on the video. I don't know who put that together, but this is a great compilation of very legitimately competent reporters who report conservative news, because reporting conservative news is not something that is easy to do. It's not, I mean, we don't get picked up very well. We fight every day to get our information out there. So this is a fabulous, comprehensive list of very good, top-notch reporters who have helped to further the conservative message.
You know what was really interesting to me, and I didn't even catch the blogs until Dr. Gina and Anne-Marie forwarded me the emails about these blogs that had picked up on our list. And I could not believe the vitriol and the hatred and the flat-out just nastiness that was coming out of these people. It was just unbelievable. It wasn't just like a, you know, a funny thing, oh, these people think they're hot or whatever. No, this was out and out just vitriol. And honestly, I was taken aback by it because I knew and I know by being in Hollywood what kind of, you know, how conservatives are thought of. But, you know, to see it in something like this that was kind of a really it was a wonderful thing to do. It was, you know, congratulating these men for being so, you know, so wonderful. And then to get this, you know, a couple of these blogs were just amazingly just nasty.
But, Morgan, I think the reason, I mean, all of us, everyone on this phone call has been on a hot list at one point. I have never seen the reaction from a hot list based on women, except, you know, I actually our side makes more fun of liberal women than anybody. I will admit that freely, you know, because people, we're not real crazy about people that don't shave their armpits and, you know, act this stuff. But I think that the reason our list threatened these people is because we weren't talking about looks. We were talking about their brains, and we were talking about their courage. And that's the thing that the left is terrified of. They don't want these. They have to ridicule and break down our best. That's the only way they can get their message through, is by ridiculing us, by degrading these people, by breaking them down to just a physical mass. And that's what they tried to do, especially Wonkette.
Well, you know, and I think, too, the filth that they had to inject into this says so much more about them than it does about us. The fact that they had to make this, you know, one of them, you know, was really basically a contest. Would you sleep with this one of the Politichicks hot guys or not?
Right.
And, you know, I have to tell you that we sat at a slumber party half loopy after we'd had a party the entire day, and none of us one time talked like that. It never crossed any one of our minds which one of these men we would ever think about sleeping with. And that's what really
disgusts. Our husbands were helping us with a lot of this.
Exactly. And that's what really disgusts them about us, is that all three of us have amazing husbands and phenomenal marriages and great families, just like so many conservative women out there. We really love our children. We really love America. It is the essence of our happiness that offends them the most. And I think they made it purely evident in the things they wrote about us just for producing that list.
Yeah.
You know, and the one thing that strikes me about this list is this is not a short list. This is a very substantial list of men. And could you say that 10 years ago you could have found this many conservative men in the country in the field of journalism who would have come out and spoken about, you know, the truth of conservatism? This is very impressive. I think you ladies have done a wonderful job.
For me, this is Anne-Marie, but for me, it's so easy to tear down everyone on our side, and we do it every day. I mean, we're the most critical of our side than sometimes than the left is. So if we're going to do that, we have got to also elevate the good guys. We've got to give them a platform, too, and show people this is who we are. This is why we love these people. These are great men. These are brave men. These are wonderful people. We don't do that often enough. So that's why I think the list also really was
And I know that Anne-Marie and Dr. Gina, they probably had, you know, 50 more or 100 that didn't even get on the list because
there's probably 1,000, huh, Gina?
Yeah, exactly. And there are so many men that were left off of the list, you know, because there just isn't enough room. But, you know, these are quiet, powerful men that carry the conservative values and carry our message, and they're not like the Anthony Wieners of the world or the Bill Clintons of the world. You know, I mean, they're not like that. They stand
for
something.
But they do have egos. Boy, some of them.
They are men.
I was shocked at some of the reactions. I was shocked. A couple of the men said, Anne-Marie, I don't feel they sent me private messages. They said, Anne-Marie, I don't feel comfortable putting this on my page, but would you please put it on there for me? And then others were saying, why wasn't I on the list? What, am I not hot enough? And Dennis Prager talked on his show about the list because he was upset that Rush Limbaugh was ahead of him. So these strong, confident men, they still got a little bit of that humanity left in them.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that was one of the most agonizing things for us ahead of time. We kept, you know, here we are at our slumber party. We've had no sleep, and somehow in the middle of all this, Anne Marie hosted this massive, like, Hollywood conservative party that same day. I don't know what she's made of. I can't make excuses for her awesomeness. But then we would every once in a while we'd get all heated about this and all stressed out that we were leaving someone out, and then we'd go, oh yeah. This is a hot list. This isn't like who's going to rule the free world or anything. This is just a hot list.
Right, right.
It ain't brain surgery.
Well, this is the first list. Is that not correct? I mean, and there will be a list next year.
Oh, yeah. And actually, I think we didn't even do hottest conservative musicians, actors, artists.
Right.
There's other lists that we might release in a couple of months. I don't know.
Ooh, but we've got comedians. We've got one that I'd love to do, and I keep telling Anne Marie, I keep harping on this, are the behind-the-scenes people who never, ever get recognized, but there's so many of them who make, you know, all of our lives daily, you know, possible. And I just think that would be a fun one to do. And comedians, too, because we have so many really funny people in conservative
Yeah, one word of warning, though. We better ask them first, because a lot of these guys won't get work anymore if they're told.
Well, yeah,
you know.
We won't out anybody.
No, I would say, listen, we're thinking of putting you on our hot list. Is that okay? Because in Hollywood, seriously, if you're conservative, you may as well kiss your career goodbye.
Well, Morgan, will you talk about
Morgan.
That a little bit?
We've got to. Okay, I'm going to make my call right now. Again, every chance I get, Morgan needs to be on Dancing with the Stars. We need to do a campaign to get her on Dancing with the Stars. She would be wonderful.
Crazy.
Okay. Well, Morgan, will you address that a little bit? Because I know that you've had a very great career in Hollywood. I mean, has this affected you being outed as a conservative woman?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, it's been pretty amazing. I mean, I was not really looking to when I came, you know, came out of the closet, so to speak, as a conservative, and I was asked by Sean Hannity to do his Great American Panel. And I remember before we went live on the show, I'm sitting at the table at the desk, and he turns to me and he said, "Are you sure you want to do this? You may never work again." And I said, "You know something, Sean? I'm okay with it. If I don't, I don't." I said, "This is much more important to me now." So I had already made up my mind that whatever happened, happened. And yes, I took an awful lot of criticism. Another guy who it doesn't really affect is John Voight. He's very outspoken, but John Voight is in a different position. He is an actor that they need and they want. And many of us who are conservatives, but we're just, you know, working actors, they can do without us. And so they would rather not have us around, and they'd rather put a liberal in. But for someone like John Voight or, you know, Clint Eastwood, yes, they're going to deal with them because they're powerful people. But I feel really badly because there are so many actors, behind-the-scenes people, musicians, a lot of people in Hollywood that are very, very conservative, and they see that where this country is headed, and they can't say a word about it because they have to feed their families and they have to keep their jobs. And I feel so bad for them, but I understand where they're coming from. I really do, and I know that it's a very, very difficult thing for them. And so what we do is those of us who do speak out, we're going to speak loudly because we need to.
Well, that's great. And maybe, you know, maybe we'll keep pushing and maybe things will change. I know
we're hoping.
Dr. Jean has taken steps in that direction, and I know Anne Marie works very hard every day to get the word out with politichicks.tv. I probably should have asked this in the very beginning, but for anybody out there in my audience who's not really familiar with Politichicks, how did Politichicks become part of the vernacular here in conservative media?
About, when was it, two years ago, about more like 3 years ago, I think, I had a little tiny video show on Patriot Update, and the people that own Patriot Update, Liberty Alliance, wanted to put together a talk show, like the conservative answer to The View is what we called it. And it was with me and Victoria Jackson and two other ladies, and it was really fun. It was great, but it really wasn't serious. It was just kind of fun, and so it kind of morphed into something else. Vicki went on her own. She has her own show and her own website, and then the brilliant, wonderful Dr. Gina and Morgan came on board, and we've had different people that have been in and out of our cast, but mainly it's the three of us now. And then a year ago, instead of we stopped doing the studio show, and instead of just folding up, I took over as the editor-in-chief and turned it more into a website, into a, like a working website with real articles and real news and investigative or commentary pieces, and trying to build up our reputation and our respect level a little bit and get us out there, because everyone that writes for Politichicks is an activist in their own areas in the United States, and it's turned into more like a really strong movement, and giving voice to a lot of women who were frustrated and had to say something. Like all of us, we had to do something. So this gives them a platform.
Yeah, it was great, Anne Marie, because I was in Marshfield, Missouri, doing the Cherry Blossom Festival a few months ago, and I actually had people coming up to me and saying, "Oh, I read Politichicks," you know, and this was. This was wonderful, and I said, oh, that's great, you know about us. Oh, yes, we know about you. You know, so the word is getting out, and I enjoyed that so much because I spoke to a lot of women in Marshfield, and they said, what can we do? What can we do? We feel so helpless. And I said, I tell you what, you submit articles, you get involved, you contact politichicks.tv, and we will start, you know, we'll get your voice out there in your community. Because they do. So many women feel so helpless about the education system, about Common Core. What can we do? What about the economics? What about our children's future? And Politichicks gives them an opportunity, and it's a forum where people can throw out ideas. And Anne Marie's made that possible.
Well, and it's so sad. I mean, I've said this before, but with Morgan and we were at CPAC this year going around politichicking. And I mean, this is a woman. I mean, I've been a fan of Morgan's long before I ever met her and found out that she's like a really great human being.
I'm not that nasty person, right?
You're wonderful, but I mean, you're not like the Hollywood person. You're like real. But I mean, she's somebody. She was Opie's first girlfriend on the Andy Griffith Show. She was in Twilight Zone. She's a movie star. She's played Scarlett O'Hara a gazillion times on telemovies. She was on Love Boat and all this stuff. So we're walking around CPAC, and I felt so sad that people were like, Morgan Brittany from Politichicks. And I'm like,
oh, no, it's great.
My career is like.
No, it's great. Believe me. I'm much happier. Trust me, I'm much happier because I feel like I'm doing something.
I just want to say one thing really quickly, and that is that the three of us would be absolutely nothing if it weren't for all the chicks that are out there every single day, yourself included, Lisa, who really, I mean, you are guiding the voice of the American conservative woman right now, and there's no single more powerful voice than the American conservative woman, because we are the mothers, we are the wives, we are the ones they're going to be influencing policy. Look at any statistical poll, look at any psychological measure, and you know that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And the chicks out there are the ones leading that charge, and I'm just so proud to be a part of all of them. And I know Morgan and Anne Marie echo the same sentiment all the time.
Absolutely. Anne Marie's done a fabulous job of putting together just a fabulous lineup of writers from across the country with opinions and information on every perspective of every issue out there. There's new articles every day covering everything, and it never gets old. It's never tired. It's great stuff, and it's all grassroots stuff. You're right. It's just the real women from across the country writing, you know, they're from their real life experiences. They're, you know, they're not inside a bubble of journalists. They're living the real life and portraying that right on the website every single day.
Yeah.
You've done a great job, yeah. Anne-Marie.
That's a great way to put that. And yeah, we're all just in awe of just being in this group. It's awe-inspiring, and every day that we read the news and we just get depressed and disgusted, I can as an editor, I can read an article that comes through, and it just reminds me why we're fighting so hard. And it's every day they inspire me. It's,
you know,
yeah,
it's something, Anne-Marie, you remember after the 2012 election and the conservatives lost, basically, and everyone was so demoralized. And I remember,
yes,
that there were so many politichicks that were writing on Facebook and writing on the website saying that they just felt so hopeless. And yet, when we all talked together and everybody put their little comments in, and Dr. Gina was there and she said, no, you don't understand. This means we have to fight more. This means we have to go out. It provided a sisterhood of women, and we all picked ourselves up and we said, no, we're going to continue this fight. And that's kind of what we do, and that's kind of what Dr. Gina and Anne-Marie do. We're a support system, and we're a support,
mm-hmm,
system for all the women. Every time something knocks us down, we come back because
we're
a group.
We're like a girdle.
Yes.
A girdle.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Only you, Gina, could come up
perfect
with that analogy.
Who says the word girdle anymore? Where did you even come up with
it? Spanx.
Yeah. I don't
Spanx
think they have girdles anymore. They're Spanx. Yeah.
Right.
Spanx. That's really what we're more like anyway, Spanx. Yeah, that's true.
That's it.
We're
going to
get in trouble here.
Okay, before I let you ladies go, I mean, not only do you produce fabulous news articles every day and great pieces of commentary, you do a lot of things to get a lot of things to promote, you know, Second Amendment rights and our constitutional rights, and you have a great I wish I was eligible for this contest, the Pink Lady Gun giveaway. I would love to have this little Pink Lady 38 special. Anne-Marie, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, it is so beautiful, and it's a work of art. It's almost over. The contest will be over, in a couple of days, I think, the end of this month.
August
31st. So you still have time. All you have to do is go to politichicks.tv and just sign up for the newsletter, and you're automatically enrolled. And guys out there, I know that there are a couple of our Politichicks fans and some of my Facebook friends and all of our favorites are listening right now. A pink gun shoots the same as a black gun. So,
right,
you know, sign up.
That's
well,
right.
You know, the additional brownie points that you get when you win the pink gun and give it to your lady, I think that,
ooh, yeah,
should be the initiative right there, the incentive.
That's right.
Absolutely. Of course, you don't want to be like Joe Biden and just say, oh, just, you know, shoot up in the air or take a baseball bat or something. I mean, really?
Spray him with hairspray. That works.
Yeah, yeah. That works.
And maybe, it would be so great if we could hand deliver to the winner. That would be so nice.
It would.
I don't think that's
going
to happen, but still.
Well, if any men out there win this beautiful Pink Lady 38 special and they want to deliver it to me, I'm good with that because I would love to have that beautiful gun. Guns are kind of like, I just recently bought a handgun not too long ago, and I kind of feel like, oh, it's like buying shoes, you know, or buying jewelry. You kind of, you know, once you have one, you kind of need another one.
That's right.
That's right. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All the bad guys need to know that, too.
They'll
right
think, believe me, if they think you're packing, they're not going to bother you.
Yeah, exactly.
And Dr. Gina has some really amazing purses on her website.
Oh.
Oh, you're so cute. Yeah, we have an Italian leather brand of concealed carry bags. The best quality you'll find anywhere. You can find them at DocGTV.com. And a lot of jewelry and T-shirts and fun stuff, too. So, yeah, we try to stock up our Patriots to keep us all motivated. Because I tell you what, when you wear out, you know, a shirt, we've got a new shirt that says, if you don't defend your Constitution, it'll be 2 weeks to defend you. You know, those kinds of things are good reminders to the whole country. And we can all be little walking billboards every day.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Yes. All right, well, not only should you go to politichicks.tv every single day, sign up and sign up to get their feed every day. Also go to drginaloudon.com and listen to Dr. Gina every day. And what time do you air, Dr. Gina? I know I listen to you at 4:00 in the afternoon here in the Midwest. What time do you go on
air? 4:00 in the Midwest, 5:00 Eastern time, and of course that would make it 2:00 my time here on the West Coast in the Pacific time.
Absolutely.
Well, and on the website, we also have a list of our appearances wherever we're going to be on and whatever media we're doing.
Yeah, I just did that today, girls.
Yep,
glad
great.
I saw that.
Yeah,
I was wondering. Oh, we do?
Yes, we do. And Gina, I haven't even fixed it yet. So Gina, if you guys send me any appearances you're going to be in, and it'll be on the site.
Awesome. Do you sleep, Anne Marie? When do you sleep?
No, I don't.
No, I didn't. I don't think, I see things on the internet all the time. It's 2 a.m, and I was like, when do you sleep?
I bear witness to Anne Marie's lack of sleeping. Yes, I do.
Oh, and it takes one to know one, Doc, by the way.
Well, true. Hi, Julie.
Well, ladies, I can't thank you enough for being on with me today. I hope you'll come back anytime. It's been great to have you all together here on Culture Vigilante. It's been thrilling. I hope everyone will go to politichicks.tv and check everything out that's going on there. Sign up for that gun giveaway and send it to me when you win it.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for having us, and thanks for everything you do for the great state of Missouri and well beyond that, I'm sure your listeners are. But thank you so much, Lisa, for everything you do.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Gina. We miss you here.
Thank
Come on
you.
Back. All right. Thanks, ladies.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
We're going to take a break, and we will be back with Tom March from the Lock and Smith Foundation with some Yankee Doodle legislation.
And when you get ready to hire somebody, you need to check against the federal database to make sure the numbers on the cards aren't forged or real. But what really Congress needs to do is to use a biometric technology to create a new tamper-proof identification card for every legal foreign worker. That's what we need. We need a tamper-proof card.
Hello. Hello. It's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the Fair Tax on the Fair Tax Show. That's Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We explode the myths. We tell the truth. We get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
When you hear that, you know it's time for Tom March of the Locke and Smith Foundation. We're here to talk legislation here. I'm not sure if we have Yankee Doodle legislation tonight, but we sure do have some legislation to talk about, this very government heavy-handed type of legislation. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing quite well. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing okay, too. It's a very beautiful evening here in the St. Louis area. For the middle of July, we have no humidity and very pleasant temperatures. How are things in the southern part of the state?
Oh, it's a beautiful sunset, even though that's already transpired and done and over with. But we got some, you know, kind of puffy, wavy clouds, and it's temperatures probably about the high 70s, low 80s, a little bit of humidity. But other than that, it beats the 95, 96, and 97s that we had a few days ago.
Oh, you betcha. So I guess you're very hot and heavy into the thick of things trying to determine Locke and Smith Foundation's number one constitutional senator and House of Representatives member, as you will be having your annual banquet coming up here pretty soon to award those prizes. Is that right?
Oh, actually, we have completed the house side, and this is the original version of the house builds. Now, of course, we've got to go back and look at the ones that the Senate changed and the House concurred with the changes. But generally, if it left the House as a bad bill, it always comes back as a bad bill. If it left the House as a good bill, very rarely does it come back and get concurred to remain a good bill. As soon as the Senate starts changing things, and it's vice versa, when the House starts changing things on Senate bills, very rarely does the original content remain to stay good the whole way through. This year we're not having a banquet. This year we're actually going to be presenting the plaques to the most constitutionally voting member of the House and the most constitutionally member of the Senate at the Consent of the Governed rally in January.
Oh, very good. I'm losing you a little bit, though. Your sound just is way low. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, that'll be interesting. That'll be great. You'll have some probably people from all over the state attending that rally. That's always very well attended. Whose great idea was that? That's awesome.
Well, we decided to get away from the banquet because it's a hard time to get some of the legislators down to Springfield, Missouri for the banquet.
Oh, okay.
And it's also a hard time for people to come to Springfield with the economy being, contrary to popular belief, we don't have a booming economy.
Yeah, exactly. Who would have guessed?
So instead of trying to get people to Springfield, we decided, well, let's go where the people are already going to be. Some people have misconceptions about what it is that we do and how we come to the conclusions that we do. And the easiest way to answer those questions is to be dead front and center in front of the legislators so they can ask questions. We've put out the opportunity to all of them to say, hey, if you can find a piece of legislation that we have graded wrong, you tell us what it is that you think that we have graded incorrect, and we will go back and look at it. And so far, no one has taken advantage of that situation. That goes for anybody. If somebody believes that we have absolutely graded a piece of legislation incorrectly, we will go back and look at it. But first, we will explain to the individual why it is that we graded it the way that we did, and we will point out the section in the Constitution that we believe that a certain section violates.
Yep. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. So you've picked out a couple of pieces of legislation today. I kind of looked over them a little earlier. I'm not sure if they're Yankee Doodle legislation quality, but they sure are heavy-handed government types of pieces of legislation. So what have you got? Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the House bill.
Okay, 135.
135.
The one about the building projects, yeah. Design and build.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So when I just kind of skimmed over this bill, what in the heck is the Missouri General Assembly doing writing a bill like this in the first place? Representative Deal and Jones, is that Tim Jones or is that the other Jones?
I don't know. We don't look at Well, we know who writes them. It's the Legislative Committee on the House side that writes them.
Okay.
But we don't look at the sponsors until we start scoring the votes. That way we leave all biases aside. It doesn't make a difference to us who sponsored it, but we can be pretty much sure that 90 to 95% of the legislation that gets anywhere in the House or the Senate, it all comes from the Republicans.
Yeah, because, well, we have a supermajority, and it's all going to roll that way politically. So this is an interesting bill. I mean, I skimmed over it. Why are they writing a design and build contract piece of legislation? Why are they even involved in this?
Well, they shouldn't be involved in it, but basically I guess they're telling me that the state of Missouri is the reason that all hospitals are built. Therefore, the state of Missouri gets to dictate how they're built. But the reason I sent you this bill, and I guess I made a mistake, I thought this is the bill that had the portion in it where if you wanted to volunteer your services, if you're a healthcare professional in Oklahoma, Kansas, it don't make a difference where, that in order for you to volunteer your services in the state of Missouri, you had to join up with some organization, and this organization has to pay a fee to the state of Missouri for the right to come in to volunteer their services, like, let's say, the Joplin Tornado.
If holy cow, doctor, so that's not only a heavy-handed piece of legislation, I would think it's unconstitutional.
Well, you know, I am not aware of anywhere where the Constitution gives, and if it does, the Constitution needs to be rewritten. But if I am a doctor in Oklahoma and the Joplin Tornado just occurred, please explain to me why it is that I have to get the government's permission to come in to volunteer my services to help out the people in Joplin in my line of profession.
Yeah.
It's all contained in licensing.
If you can pass the boards, those are national boards as far as I understand. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think they're national boards. I think if you can perform medicine, if you can practice medicine in Oklahoma, you can practice it in Missouri. You know, broken leg is a broken leg in all 50 states.
Except for in the one section of this piece of legislation, it specifically states which two tests that individuals are required to take in order to meet state certification. And there's a Senate bill that we looked at this evening that involves this issue. And we do have two doctors. One doctor is actually on the legislative committee, and the other doctor is actually the president of the foundation itself. We're going to find out from them how many tests are available or how many organizations offer a test that – it's almost like the state of Missouri. Now, if there's only two, we're fine with it. But let's say there's 15 different tests and there's 15 different organizations out there that offer similar tests that would qualify a doctor to do whatever a doctor does. The state of Missouri has decided that only two of those will be allowed in the state of Missouri for these requirements.
Okay. Well, and states' rights, I mean, the state can do that if they want.
Well,
yeah.
I would rather, but see, they're nitpicking. They're choosing which testing criteria that they will allow, which opens up to which of these organizations sent money to campaigns and which one didn't.
Are you kidding?
No,
are
I'm
you kidding?
Curious. If you think about it, if you're an organization and you want the doctors in the state of Missouri to test using your test only, well, then you're going to start funneling money to campaigns to make sure that there's a piece of legislation written to make sure that your test is the only one that is allowed within the state of Missouri.
Okay.
If all these tests are similar and all these tests do the same identical thing, I believe it behooves the state of Missouri to open it up to all of these tests. And as long as you're certified by one, or you can even say two, then there's no reason why you can't practice in the state of Missouri.
Well, you know, I totally understand what you're saying. But, you know, the state should be able to say, how, you know, I mean, you got states right here, and the state should be able to say that. But then on the other hand, it kind of seems to me like it's a little heavy-handed to begin with anyway. If you can pass a national board examination, why is the state, unless the boards are completely lacking in some way, shape, or form, why is the state bringing on this extra criteria in the first place? Is there some real reason why? I mean, you know, you have some doctors in your organization. Why do we need this extra oversight?
Well, let's use this example. Does the state have a right to say that AT&T is the only cell phone provider allowed in the state of Missouri?
They could. I think they could. If states have complete sovereignty, and that's what we believe, that states have sovereignty, I don't think I would like that very much. And I would certainly vote out any legislators that tried to put something like that through. I mean, if you're talking constitutionally, I think the state could do it, don't you? Am I wrong?
No, I think constitutionally it would violate Article 1, Section 1 and Article 1, Section 2.
Okay, which says?
It breaks it down to the government operates at the behest of the people.
Yes.
The people themselves have the supreme authority in government. I mean, it doesn't say that like I'm saying it, but my constitution's in the back of the trunk, so I don't have it with me right now. But
okay, let me pull mine out here.
It grants the authority of government to the people.
Uh-huh.
And I don't believe the representatives of the people nor the state senators of the people have the authority to dictate to the people that AT&T is going to be the only cell phone provider allowed in the state of Missouri. I think that usurps their authority big time.
Well, yeah. I mean, if we elected them to go there and represent us, and if that was the kind of representation we want, I mean, it's kind of like Obamacare. You know, if Massachusetts
but
wants Obamacare, they can have it there.
If they are dictating to the people of the state of Missouri that AT&T is the only cell phone provider allowed in the state of Missouri, then they're not representing it. They're representing themselves.
Well, they are, but then you vote their little dictatorial backsides out of office because you don't like that legislation.
I mean, that would be like them saying that Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield is the only insurance provider that's allowed in the state of Missouri.
Kind of like the healthcare exchanges we're going to get soon. Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I mean, I don't think that they should do it. That's why you vote them out of office. I don't like that. They're doing a lot of things we don't like, which we should vote them out of office. It's a representative government, though.
If there are 15, and I'm guessing, I'm not saying 15 is the correct number, but if there are 15 tests and all 15 tests do the same identical thing, the state of Missouri should not confine an individual to only one or two of those. They should be able to take any of those 15 that will allow them to be board-certified doctors. Because when you get to the point where you're only hand-picking one or two of those, you almost have to look, what did those one or two companies do to get the monopoly in the state of Missouri for all the testing of board-certified doctors?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're opening the door for corruption. And then again, you should be voting their little dictatorial backsides out of office.
I don't disagree with that one bit.
Right. Well, let's go to the next bill because we're running short on time. I want to hit them both. You got SB 125, which says, it doesn't say. I have to go back there. This is the bill this is the school board bill. Okay, speaking of too much heavy-handed government, good Lord.
If I'm not mistaken, this is the piece of legislation, and for some reason my computer is incredibly slow. It allows for a teacher to be on unexcused leave of absence for up to 3 years without another teacher being able to be hired while they are on this unexcused absence.
Yeah. I was elected to the Francis Howell School Board in 2000. And that year that I was elected, the school district was going underwater, the horrible, terrible financial problems at that time. And they had something in the policy at that time called unlimited sick leave. And it was costing the district gazillions of dollars. I don't remember exactly what the number was, but it was a lot of money. And it meant that a teacher, you know, teachers had unlimited sick leave, which they were paid for, plus they were hiring part-time substitute teachers to take their place, you know, while these teachers were taking unlimited sick leave. This kind of reminds me of that. You know, you've got the state government coming in telling a school district how to staff their schools. And how much does that cost a school district?
Well, do we actually have teachers who have been laid off? Of course, they'll say it's not laid off. It's unexcused leave of absence. But do we have teachers that have been laid off?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, here in my district, we just elected a teacher to the House of Representatives who was trying, and I think there's legal action pending, and I'm not completely sure about all the details, but he was trying to get leave of absence while he served his term in the legislature, and they fired him. I'm wondering if this is coming from that. Brian Spencer.
Oh,
He's actually my rep here in St. Charles County, and he was a teacher in St. Charles County, and he asked for leave of absence, and instead of giving him leave of absence, which they had done to other teachers in the past for other reasons, they fired him. So I'm guessing that this has something to do with that.
Well, another thing that we don't like about this piece of legislation either is it specifically states on page 7 that the state of Missouri, its agencies and employees shall be absolutely immune from liability for any and all acts or omissions relating to or in any way involving the LAP school district, the special administrative board, its members, or employees. Such immunities and immunity doctrines as exist or may hereinafter exist, benefiting boards of education, their members, and their employees shall be available to the special administrative board, its members, and employees. If a governmental employee has taken an action which has directly led to or has this action has been deemed to cause a scenario which led to the lapse district or led to teachers not being able to teach or led to students not being able to take certain tests that were required in order to meet certain specifications, why is that individual held immune from that action?
Yeah, exactly. So
it kind of brings me to, you know, Child Protective Services. If they take a child and after 8, 9, 10, 11 months of investigation, they finally figure out that the parents weren't doing anything wrong, I mean, if I did that, I would be guilty of kidnapping.
Right.
Why can an official under the auspices of government do it, and they're not held liable for it?
Yeah. Why are we not? Why are we allowing government entities, and we do this on every level of government, to be immune from responsibility for their actions? Yeah.
One of the things that we as an organization this year are going to do is we're going to try to get a legislator to get to the point where they start writing into the legislation some teeth that hold governmental employees responsible for their actions if it can be shown that this action violated the best interest of the child or violated, you know, taking a child when there was no, we're going to get back to the Parental Rights Act here, but if an organization or a governmental employee took an action that directly violated somebody's constitutional rights, like Department of Revenue, why aren't they being held liable for it?
Yep, absolutely. Well, you know what? You need to go back and listen to last week's show. We had Marika Peshman on, and I think this is something we need to look into, especially for the DOR scandal. She was talking RICO. RICO, I think, is something that needs to be brought out of mothballs and taken a look at, because I know that they're not going to – we've got 90 seconds before the show ends, but that needs to be something that needs to be looked at. So maybe that's something that we as the grassroots can investigate. Tom Martz, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to run out of time here in just about 1 minute. Tom Martz, Locke & Smith Foundation.
LockandSmith.com. Lock is spelled with an E.
LockandSmith.com. Thank you, Tom Martz. Come back again very soon with some more legislation, some more Yankee Doodle legislation. We'll be back here next week, folks. Thanks for listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Thanks, Lisa.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.